Whoever is listening, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Man with the Plan podcast. If you've listened to the Clemson dubcast by Larry Williams, you've probably seen this guy to your left on the screen, Toby Corston, freshman at the Tiger and Tiger Vision and future intern at TigerIllustrated.com, getting ready to replace me here and do a much better job than I ever could. Toby's a rock star, and I'm happy to have him for the first time on the podcast. Very overdue. Toby, how are you doing, bud? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I don't know if I'll be able to fill your shoes right away, but I hope to do my best at Tiger Illustrated. I'm happy to be here talking Clemson basketball.
So the thing I first wanted to start with is not necessarily a basketball question, but it's the in terms of your travel, because you told me, I think, Monday at our meeting last night that you went straight from the second round game at Baylor. And once everything was wrapped up, the whole excitement and the moment of it sort of died off, you got in a car and you hauled over to Clemson. How in the world did you do that? Like, let's walk through the mindset it takes to be a madman like that.
Well, I had missed class last Wednesday, or two Wednesday and Fridays ago, because we were just on spring break for the ACC tournament. So I left to go cover that, and, you know, an unfortunate loss there early. But I knew I had to be at class at 11 a.m. on Monday. And I was like, all right, I'm going to be awake. The adrenaline's pumping, especially after a win. I was like, let's just get in the car and drive and see how far I make it. And so I drove about 4 hours and then pulled over to the side of the road because I got tired. And I was like, all right, I don't want to be dangerous. I have time to spare a little bit. So I pulled over and I slept for a couple hours. And then I got back on the road and got back to Clemson at like 8 a.m. and was ready to go for class. But it was just adrenaline kept me going, and the need to get to class because I'm still a student. But yeah, I don't know if I'd choose to do that again.
So one of the things that I'm thankful about being a senior is my class schedule sort of wiped at this point, is that I have a few specific days and classes that I need to worry about, and it was all checked off. So this is the reason why you'll be seeing some stuff over my not maybe on my channel. We're thinking about maybe doing a day in the life here, if we can get that edited to go to LA. But I can't believe your dedication there, man, because I think the adrenaline would have started at 30 minutes. And the second it crashed, it's just, I would be a zombie and I would be a danger to everybody on the road, like you said. So kudos to you for pulling over and having the thought to do that. I will never understand it. I would just taken the L and slept in at that point.
Yeah, I'll definitely be doing that next time. That's for sure.
So Toby, can you walk us through your role of what you did from Thursday, and I guess Wednesday too? My days are getting all scrambled up with when Clemson played, how it all worked out, but take us through your trip to Memphis, just from your perspective, how was it? And then we'll get into the basketball.
Yeah. So I got up Wednesday morning. I left around noon. I was in Harrisonburg, Virginia. That's where I live. And I was back home for spring break. And I started driving, and I got about eight hours done. And then I slept at a hotel that night, because, you know, Clemson didn't play until the afternoon on Thursday. And I was like, all right, get a good night's sleep, get ready to go for the trip. And so I slept there, woke up the next morning, drove to the arena and started working. So for both the games, I shot both the games, both Thursday and Saturday against New Mexico and then Baylor. And then I wrote a preview on the Baylor game. Luckily, we had somebody back here writing the recap so that I didn't have to do both. I did that for the ACC tournament, where I would shoot the game and then write the recap real quick after, which I enjoy, but it's a lot of work. So I got to just focus on photos. I got a photo gallery up for both games. So that was most of my role. And then I was in all the press conferences, you know, just taking notes, making sure I understood what was happening in case any stories jumped out to me. We were supposed to have somebody else go and be there in Memphis with me to be writing stuff, but unfortunately that fell through, but got some photos. And then, yeah, the in-between day, so Clemson played New Mexico Thursday, right? Big win. It was exciting. But then Friday they had practice and a bunch of press conferences. So we just got to hear Brad Brownell go off on the Big 12 and the ACC again. That's always an exciting one to hear him talk about that. And then, you know, Saturday got there early. I got there to the arena about 1. Clemson played at 5, 3, 5,
something like that.
I don't even remember. It was a long day. But got there, just got all set up. I like trying to get to the arena as early as possible, just so that I know everything's good, everything's set up, and it's cool. We were in FedEx Forum, and it's a cool arena. There's nothing better than walking out and seeing that March Madness logo on the court. So getting to hang out there with you and everybody else who traveled there, and just, hang out on the court. Who doesn't want to do that? The only thing better than that is actually playing, and I don't think either of us have the skill set to do that.
I don't have any tape of my pickup basketball, and that's probably a really good thing. So I think it was, I will say this. I think we could both do a better job offensively than what Virginia put up in the first four. But that may be like, okay, like someone's rolling their eyes as they hear me say that, but that was bad. But
That was
side note on
bad.
that.
They're not, if they saw us walking the ball up the court, they're not stepping out. I bet I could drain enough half quarters in 40 minutes to get to 40 points, right? It would be close.
So the one thing that really fascinates me about having you on the podcast, and I can hear someone's voices. You need to have Meryl Mann on the podcast, my mom, because of this exact question. But you mentioned your primary role of shooting these games, and I think it's so fascinating being able to be so close and having that specific angle, because you're right where you're coming to where Clemson is offensively in the second half, and your eyes are specifically through the camera. But I wanted to ask you is how does that enhance maybe your perspective of the game? Because I've seen so many times on pictures of things maybe officiating misses or something that I miss with my own two eyes. Maybe I'm tweeting something out or putting something in the Tiger Illustrated board and I miss something happen. You essentially get a stop motion film of everything that happens from step one all the way to the final buzzer. So how do you feel like photography enhances your perspective of the game, and as you're taking the game in, feels like you don't miss a single step. And so do you think that enhances maybe when you're doing a recap following, like when you're playing New Mexico, you took the picture so you can maybe go to something if you need context. How does that enhance your experience?
So it's really interesting. You mentioned the officiating thing. You definitely pick up on some missed calls or where contact was, or it was like, oh, it didn't look like there was contact. And you pull up the photo and you're like, you're right, he didn't touch him. So that side of it does enhance just like little things like that. But I feel like I miss more of the game through a lens because I'm trying to follow the ball. I'm trying to get certain photos, or Brad Brownell's yelling at his team as they're running a play. All right, I want to get a photo of that. So I get more specifics, but when it comes to writing a recap, like it's hard for me to get the feel of the game through photography because I'm so focused on getting a shot or something that I miss the overall feel of the game. Like when I'm staring through a camera lens, I'm focused on who has the ball, or I'm following Joe Girard come off a screen. And I don't notice what's happening over in the other corner. I don't pick up on as much of the feel of the game that I would when I'm writing a recap or just watching the game from above. So I think for me, it's harder. I would rather watch a game from the sidelines and not be shooting it to pick up a feel. But at the same time, I think it does enhance little specifics that I then pick up when I do that. It's like, oh, I know that when PJ Hall walls someone up, he's probably going to jump and leave his feet. And I notice that every time he does that, because each time in the photo, I'm like, all right, he's going to jump here. I got to get ready to move my camera up. So there's little things like that that I think definitely help. But overall, in my opinion, it's way harder to get the feel of a game from shooting it.
It's fascinating because there's so much I feel, and I mentioned this before, I see it so many times where, and I've seen this a lot in football too, is that I'll be looking at my mom's pictures and she's just going through them and it feels like you see a holding call every single time just because of the way it is. It's not like it's what they don't see that's fascinating to me. So I think that extra element is so just, it's like a mystery. I certainly, if you gave me a camera and put me in your position, I think I'd be taking pictures of like the floor. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. It'd be like a puppy with a stick. I don't know what to do with it. I have it. I don't know it. I don't know.
No, it's your mom mentioned that to me one time. She's like, I keep trying to get him out to shoot, and you never do. But yeah, I don't have I personally, I think I talked about this on Larry's podcast. I don't have that much experience shooting. The most I've done is here in my freshman year. I've obviously done a lot now, so I feel a little bit more confident. But I did a little bit here and there in high school, but I kind of just picked up a camera when I got to college and was like, all right, this seems cool. I'll try this. And here we are. So
Here
I
you
got a lot of
are.
room to grow in that section, but it gets me into some pretty cool places like March Madness.
Did you ever think that when you thought, oh, this is cool, that you would be capturing the moments of Clemson making the Sweet 16?
Not at all. A little bit because I didn't think that as a freshman I'd be able to get there, but more so because I did not think that Clemson basketball was going to be making a 16, Sweet 16 this year.
So let's try, that's a great segue to transition to the actual basketball of it. And this is sort of the fascinating thing, is that we have different perspectives from what we saw, because I think there's some things that you picked up on that I might have missed, and then vice versa. So my big takeaway from the weekend is the things that old Clemson basketball used to win games for, they won this weekend, where it was the old defense that Brownell used to harp on. It was not the PJ Halls or the Joe Girards that were, I think they were the first 600 and 500 point scorers in Clemson's history, if I'm not mistaken. That could be totally wrong, but just to sort of capture how dynamic they've been offensively and how much they've relied on them throughout the entirety of the regular season. So it was Chase Hunter, RJ Godfrey, and some just damn good defense that got Clemson to the Sweet 16. And I'm sitting there going, you mentioned how the silent, you get a feel for it. I felt like Clemson from the start of the New Mexico game to about 5 minutes before Baylor made their big run, I felt like that was the best coaching Brad Brownell's done, I think, in his career. That may be an overstatement, but I feel like you look at New Mexico and Baylor and what they brought to the table offensively, New Mexico winning their conference, Baylor being the pedigree that they are in a as a basketball organization, and you have Brad Brownell putting the offenses in a blender and making them uncomfortable. And I think that's such a value trait that Clemson can have moving forward. But it was fascinating to me that, okay, this is why this team is capable of making the Sweet 16. That was their ceiling to me, I felt, is if they're going to make some big things happen, it was that Sweet 16 run. And they finished that. They've done that. And it's fascinating the ways that I thought they would make the Sweet 16 are not the ways they won it. Like RJ Godfrey at the line going 4 for 4 at the end as a 50% free throw shooter never would have crossed my mind. So Toby, for you, what were your takeaways from the weekend in terms of the basketball we saw on the court?
Agree with you that they did not make the Sweet 16 in the way that I thought they would. Before the tournament, I was saying that the two big X factors for Clemson are going to be Joe Girard and Josh Beadle. And Josh Beadle hasn't seen the court in March Madness, I don't believe, or maybe a little bit in New Mexico. And then Joe Girard, he's not been bad, but he hasn't been making that many shots. And so I called myself out on that, and it's not how it's been, but they played some of the best basketball I think they've ever played. Jack Clark is the biggest piece of this team in the success of it, in my opinion. He's been able to shut down the main offensive factor for both New Mexico and Baylor throughout. And having him healthy, getting him back in the starting lineup, this team, PJ Hall, kind of all the guys in the locker room were talking about it. The last 3 to 4 games of the season, they lost 3 out of the 4, but they were playing some really good defense. And you didn't notice it because they were losing the games. But with Jack Clark having been in the lineup a consistent amount of time by then, I think everything started clicking for them. Their offense wasn't quite there. But now that they're moving into the tournament, Chase Hunter has gone on fire. The defense is clicking. It's just been incredible basketball from them. However, both New Mexico and Baylor, I think Clemson could have easily lost. It felt like they dominated both games until Baylor made that run at the end. But New Mexico, going back to that game, they missed a lot of open shots. Like Clemson played very, very good defense and made them uncomfortable clearly, but New Mexico missed a lot of open shots. I don't have the exact numbers up, but they were not good shooting from three. It was like 13% or something that I shot from
Both under
3 point range.
25%.
Yeah, it was bad. And part of that, you have to absolutely give credit to Clemson's defense. But at the same time, there were quite a few open shots that New Mexico missed. And that's basketball. They weren't able to go on a run, and Clemson dominated the game. But I think if they make a couple of those timely shots, it's a very different game that we're talking about. And then moving to Baylor, this is a hot take, but I think one of the best things that could have happened for Clemson is PJ Hall getting in foul trouble, because their starting lineup when they were out there, from what I saw, was not the best lineup that they could put out there against Baylor. When they had Chauncey Wiggins in the game and Ian Shefflin playing the center role, that I think that was the best lineup that they could have put out there, because it without PJ, they aren't able to stretch the floor as much. But Ian Shefflin against Baylor's guards was not playing great defense. He kept getting beat kind of down low. And it was struggling. That's where Clemson was getting a lot of points off of Ian Shefflin. And then you move Ian Shefflin to their center. You have Chauncey Wiggins come out. You have him play some really good defense. He played just as many minutes as PJ Hall in the game. And I think he was a more important factor in that Baylor game than PJ Hall was. He comes out, he plays some really good defensive minutes for the team. Jack Clark's out there playing great defense. Chase Hunter's going off once again. And Joe Girard is taking up space on the court, and in a good way, not in a bad way. He's making shots. He's one of those guys that they have to step out and guard, which opens up more things for Ian down low. And I think that's why they won the game. I don't think they would have won the game if PJ Hall and their starting lineup were out on the court for 35 minutes together.
That's a really fascinating point that you bring up. And it's not a knock on PJ Hall. And
no,
whatsoever.
Absolutely, yeah. Not. I was one of those saying, like, if PJ Hall doesn't play 30 minutes in the game, we're going to lose because he's that good of a player. But our bench has really stepped up throughout this tournament.
Yeah, it's sort of the fascinating thing is that you don't get the PJ Hall minutes that you're accustomed to. Like, if you had told me that PJ Hall has played a total of 40 minutes in this tournament, I thought, okay, first of all, they're not getting past round one without 25 minutes at least of Hall, and that 19 points, 8 points you usually get from him. And he's prone, as we've seen throughout the season, to have offensive explosions where he's unstoppable from on all three levels, whether it's behind the arc, whether it's in mid-range and just imposing his will inside. So to see him on the bench and you have a lineup of, I think they mentioned the length of Wiggins, you have Jack Clark out there, you have Godfrey, you have Shefflin, and then you have Girard. And I want to talk about Girard real quick. Defensively is something that I really saw was he is a pest. And I remember in the first couple games with Clemson, I think the first close game, Girard was sitting on the bench because Brownell saw Girard defensively as we can't have him out there because that's a liability. And the growth that he's had, I think this really exemplifies what this team's all about and sort of the why Girard wanted to come here and what he was willing to do for Brownell is you see him playing 35 minutes and he's running around. It's like he was guarding Curry. You know how Curry likes to move around for the Warriors and just he zigzags. It's all the directions. And you just saw Girard getting in people's faces. Sure, you can shoot over him because he's not as tall as the average guard, I feel. I think 6'2", 6'1", maybe. Not saying that's short because they all tower over me in the locker room. But the way he played defense, it was just, okay, this is – if you showed Girard that tape of him playing defense against Baylor and showed that to him when they were about to open the court in an exhibition against Newberry, I think his mind would have exploded because there's no way that amount of progression in such a short time can happen. That was incredibly impressive.
He is – the pest is, I think, the best word you could have found for it because he is absolutely a pest. If I were getting guarded by him, I'd be like, why is this – like, I'm not bigger than him by any means. But if I was one of Baylor guards, I'd be like, why is this little guy just – following me everywhere. He gets around. I don't think he got caught on one screen in the Baylor game. Like, he's getting over them and he's just finding a way to make Baylor's guards uncomfortable in that game. And he has been for the last few games. He's just all over the court. I think he's probably run almost double the amount that anyone else on the team has traveled on the court in this tournament. Like, he offensively and defensively, he just finds ways to get open or find different paths on the court that most people wouldn't find to do his job. And it's really interesting to see, because you're right, he's not the best defender in the world. He's not going to go up there and block. He's not going to have a really tough contest, but he's just going to get in the minds of whoever he's guarding. They're going to be like, he's always right there. I'm never going to have an open look, which is what a good defender does.
And I think that is attributed to, I think you mentioned the open shots that Baylor and New Mexico had. I think sometimes when you And then you talk about timeliness and rhythm within these shots. When you have someone like Girard being a complete pest for you, and then all of a sudden you're left wide open, I think mentally there's something there that just – you're so used to being calling me like,
surprise.
Where is he? It's like a quarterback's timer in the pocket. And when you ever have – there's sometimes when the rush is coming at you so much throughout the game, and then you get that one clean pocket, you rush your read because you're just waiting to get hit. And I think that sort of contributes to – some of those open shots not falling because their timing is messed up, their rhythm is messed up, and that's attributed to what Clemson was able to do. And I think maybe that's why Girard offensively hasn't been able to provide as much as a punch as I thought. And I thought he played really well against Baylor, not in terms of where he was shooting behind the arc, but just getting open and finding some pockets because they're really defending Girard well. But he sort of accepted that, hey, if I'm not going to get my stuff offensively, I'm going to get some steals defensively. I'm going to be a pest. I'm going to fly through these screens and I'm going to make an impact the way I can. It just being able to watch it up so close, I never would have been able to tell you that if we were up 60 feet up in the rafters of Little John.
No, he finds ways to be effective on the court no matter what he's doing. But also on the offensive side, he's normally throughout this entire season, he's hit some very, very timely threes for Clemson, which he hasn't done in the tournament. And I think he's due for it. It'll be really fun to see him against Arizona. But he can hit shots when he needs to. We ran a beautiful flare screen, I think, halfway through the first half where Ian Shefflin he fed it to Chase and then went around Ian and had a wide open mid-range jumper just right in front of Clemson's bench and drained it. And it was the easiest 2 points I think Clemson might have gotten all tournament because he was wide open. So Brad does a very good job at – he doesn't run the offense through anybody. Chase brings it up. But there's not one person they're trying to feed it to every time unless PJ's on the court. But – he finds plays for each individual person to get them open. He finds ways to make Joe Girard have open looks so that he can try and get Joe going. I think that was a big thing is that Joe wasn't really going in the New Mexico game, and he tried to get Joe going in the Baylor game, which he wasn't bad. He wasn't on fire by any means, which we still won the game. And I think he's gonna heat up against Arizona, but he just finds ways to be effective on the court no matter what he's doing.
You mentioned Chase Hunter. I'd love to talk about him for a quick second. I talked to him on Saturday, and this is not a LeBron thing where it's like, oh, I knew Kobe was dropping 80. But the way that I had this conversation with him and just the look that he had, it was this just supreme confidence. And I think no one needed a 20-point game against New Mexico than Chase Hunter did, because you go from the BC game where he legs a complete goose egg, doesn't make a single field goal, and you have that 9 days to sit on it. I think some would absolutely crumble if it was me and I had that kind of bad performance. You're hearing it from the media. You're hearing it from the fans. You're hearing the Brownell conversation. They're going to lose to New Mexico. The pressure is insurmountable. And you go out there, you play free, and it felt like they got the monkey off their back. And then all of a sudden, it flips a script, and he's got back-to-back 20-point games. I've never seen anything like that with just, I think, a complete offensive turnaround, and then you have everything just sort of fall into place with Chase. So it'll be really fascinating to see.
Yeah, you got to give him credit for that. Like, he's just the mentality that he has to have to be able to do it. It's a little bit of dad power. He's talked about that. But it's just incredible that he was able to do that. And then I think you have to give a lot of credit to Brownell. I remember Brownell talking about he sat down with Chase after that game and was like, it's not your fault. These things happen. Like, he tried to make sure Chase wasn't super upset over it. And Chase has been dealing with some adversity all year. I think at the start of the year, there were people talking like, oh, he gets the ball in his hands and the possession's over. And all of a sudden, he's had this offensive explosion now in the tournament where it's like, all right, the possession's over, but it means he's making a bucket in the tournament, or he's feeding someone else. So I think just his mindset, I don't know how he's done it with everything that was going on. But his mindset is maybe one of the strongest on the team to be able to bounce back from that.
You mentioned all the stuff he was going through. He was having a child, and the birth of his child happened in the middle of the season. That's a lot to take as being a father for the first time for him. And so have all that going around, and then in the postseason, everyone said this team goes offensively as far as Chase Hunter can take them. And so far, they've been absolutely right, and he's led the charge. RJ Godfrey's provided stuff off the bench. It's been really incredible. Toby, before we get wrapped up, do you have any other thoughts from the tournament? I mean, we saw America welcome and embrace Jack Golke. We saw a bunch of crazy upsets. Yale beats Auburn. There's so many different things going on. Was there maybe a moment that stuck out to you with this tournament? I know that it was tough to watch with all the work we were doing, but just what a crazy tournament so far.
Crazy tournament, but also it's been all chalk in the ones and two seeds. Like, they're all still in it. That's been the most interesting thing that's jumped out to me. I think it's the first time that's happened since — this is completely wrong, but it's been at least 10 years, I think, since that's happened. And they're all still in it. That's been the biggest piece that jumped out to me, is that these teams are legit. They know what they're doing, and Clemson has a very tough matchup against Arizona, who's one of those one and two seeds who have just been finding ways to get the job done. So could we get our first tournament with 4-1 seeds in the final four? I hope not, as a Clemson fan. But that's been the biggest thing that stuck out to me as the tournament's gone along is that there's been some big upsets, Kentucky being one of them, but there hasn't been that major, major upset yet. And I think, you know, maybe Clemson's poised to be the first to knock out one of those ones or two seeds.
Maybe that's it. How, in your mind, Clemson beat, if we're going to read the headline, Clemson reaches the Elite Eight, how do you see that playing out?
I actually see it playing out fairly easily for Clemson. Arizona has had some bad games. They've been very up and down this season. They lost to USC. I think they lost to Oregon State as well. They've had a couple very bad losses where the team has just fallen apart. And I think Clemson matches up very well against Arizona. Obviously, Arizona is an extremely talented team, but I like how we match up one-on-one against them. I think PJ Hall, as long as he doesn't get in foul trouble, because Arizona likes to feed the ball inside a lot, will have a great night and be able to kind of dominate that side of the court. Chase Hunter is going to have his hands full with Caleb Love. But I think this team can handle Arizona. They need to play the basketball they've been playing the last two games to do that. But if they play like that, I think they have a very good shot at beating Arizona, even if Arizona is firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those games where it's the pedigree of the organization versus the product on the court that it's going to be. We're going to see how it plays out. I personally think that it's going to be, I think Caleb Love and what this Arizona team has done in the tournament, they've sort of had a Clemson moment where they got their you-know-whats handed to them by USC. I think it was like a blowout of epic proportions.
It was bad.
And then you go into the tournament and you turn it around. You have a quality win against Dayton. You have a quality win against Long Beach with a coach that was ready to leave anyways. Where that whole press conference was wild. But it'll be interesting to see. It's another offensively minded team. So we'll have to see defensively how they match up. And I can't wait to provide that coverage in Los Angeles on Thursday night. So can't wait.
Yeah, Clemson's transition defense has been great throughout this tournament, and Arizona plays very well in transition. So I think whoever wins that battle is going to come out on top. But it'll be a fun game to watch, that's for sure.
Absolutely. That, guys, this was Toby Corsten in episode 159 of the Man with the Plan podcast. Stay tuned for some coverage on TigerIllustrated.com of the Sweet 16, and be on the lookout for Toby Corsten's stuff at Tiger Vision and the Tiger. He's a rock star, guys. I know in a couple years when I'm long gone from Clemson, he will be one of the faces, at least student media-wise, of this future beat. So, guys, be sure to look out for Toby. Toby, anything before we wrap up?
Thanks for having me. I appreciate all the kind words. I got big shoes to fill with you, but I look forward to the next few years of college.
Absolutely. Guys, be on the lookout for more content from the Man with the Plan podcast, and subscribe if you like what you see. And if you want Toby back on the podcast, please let me know, because I'm open for repeat guests. Thanks as always for listening. Take care and have a fantastic day.